For many Canadians, Gordon's first record was like the Ark of the Covenant being delivered to Canada. You know, it's like almost like your childhood soundtrack or something, you know?
That is the voice of Martha Kehoe, one of two directors of the great documentary film, If You Could Read My Mind, a film that chronicles the life, times, and music of the late, great Gordon Lightfoot. Lightfoot passed away earlier this week at the age of 84, but what a career and legacy he leaves behind. Welcome to Rock Conversations. I'm your host, Rob Bob, the self-proclaimed patriarch of rock and roll. And some of you might find it odd that we are featuring Gordon Lightfoot on Rock Conversations. But come on, don't you think he influenced a few rock and rollers, singer-songwriters along the way? Some of his tunes are even still played on rock and roll stations like KQRS in Minneapolis and The Drive in Chicago. So it's only fitting that we remember the music and the life of Gordon Lightfoot today. We'll be joined by Martha and her collaborator, Joan Tassoni, in just a minute or so. But first, let me remind you that you can listen to Rock Conversations wherever you get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify, you name it. My Gordon Lightfoot stories, I wouldn't say they're few and far between, but I certainly was exposed to him at an early age. I think we, as a family, used to rent a cabin up north on the North Shore, and someone left behind Gord's Gold or some other cassette. Yes, those were the days of cassettes. And from that moment on, our family became huge Gordon Lightfoot fans. I think I only saw him in concert twice, once in 91 at Ravinia, outside of Chicago, and once in 1995 at O'Shaughnessy Auditorium in St. Paul, Minnesota, in the College of St. Catherine. He was great both times. You know, there were times when he was drinking where I understand the shows weren't quite as good as they could have been. But the two times I saw him, he was spot on and his band was with him. And then I'll confess something. You know, so many people know Gordon for his song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, which is just incredible. And the film, the documentary film, kind of chronicles how it was essentially done in one take without any rehearsals. I'll leave it at that because I don't want to spoil the rest of the story. But I'll make a confession here that I have a certain fascination with iron ore ships. Yes, if my wife is listening, she's probably laughing because whenever we go to the North Shore, I'm always kind of looking for ships. Don't worry, I'm a safe driver, but I can spot those ships with my shipdar. Some people have radar; I've got shipdar. So I've always loved that song as well. All right, without further ado, let's get to our rock conversation and hear about the legacy of Gordon Lightfoot.
Oh, let's go back, let's go back, let's go back again.
It's been quite a week, and I know everyone who enjoyed Gordon Lightfoot's music probably has different memories this week, different feelings. When I saw the news, I was initially sad, not surprised, but sad. And then the first thing my wife and I did is we were actually laying in bed, getting ready to go to sleep, and we called up your film on the phone and just listened to the first, you know, 20, 30 minutes before I fell asleep. What's the week been like for both of you? Joan, I'll start with you.
Oh, that's a tough question because the news hit me hard. You know, I love Gord, and the day after, I was pretty much a wreck. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't deal with anyone really, except Martha. but I've since, the next day I woke up and Gord's words were kind of ringing in my brain. Just don't stop is something he says in the film. And that was his attitude, and enjoy it along the way. Toward the end of the film, he makes a little speech about how he's enjoyed his life, basically, everything, so much. So I took that, I tried to, you know, take in that spirit of Gordon. I've sort of felt better since, remembering good times too.
Martha, what's the week been like for you?
Again, very similar with Joni. Just a real feeling of loss. Initially, just a feeling of loss and sadness. And it's a little bit hard to explain because, you know, I think Joan and I both experienced his death as a death of a friend or a person that we have an intimate relationship with. Let's say, in my case, I wouldn't say friend necessarily. Joanie, I have a unique relationship with Gord because I have kind of an intimate relationship with him, but we aren't good long friends like Gordy, like Joanie and he were. So, but I know, knowing Gord, you know that his legacy is what he cares about. He cared about his family and his music at the end, very much. Those were his two things. Like if you spend a day with him, he would talk about it constantly, you know, going through his mind, how his family was going to be okay, how his music was going to live on. And so like I got up in the morning and I went out for a walk with my headphones on and I put all the saddest songs on that make me cry. And I cried around my neighborhood for quite a while marveling at his artistry and the subtlety that he has in every song, in every song. Like the most B song on any record of Gord's is revealing about him, about what he thought about life, about his feelings. Like it's insane how much he has left us.
How did you go about getting him to agree to participating in your documentary film?
Well, we had at Insight Productions had done a lot of work with Gordon, and we proposed it, and he said for many years no. Other people, of course, asked him if he would let them do a documentary, but we had sort of developed a trust over the years, and when he was 75, he just decided it was time. He hadn't wanted himself to be, you know, capsulized. He was always an active. The road meant so much to him to be out on the road doing his music. So I think he didn't want to do it too early. But when he was 75, he said, okay, let's go ahead and do it. And it surprisingly took us 5 years to get the financing for the film. So it came
Really?
up.
I would have thought,
It
and I know getting documentary film, I know firsthand getting the financing is not easy, but I would think, or I would have thought with a subject like Gordon Lightfoot, it would have come about a little more quickly.
No
People were
shit.
certainly interested, but what it was too is that we really wanted to do his music justice, and we wanted to have good visuals. And the footage and the music rights cost a lot of money. So we wanted to get enough that we felt we could showcase enough of his actual music and the good footage that we knew existed because
It's
we.
Martha,
But
go ahead. Yeah.
we're not known for our compromise, Rob.
I think we'd all
No,
get along.
it's so true. Well, you know, you're gonna make something about Gord. If Gord picks you to make the show, there's a reason, right? But the funny thing is, Rob, he had a very different idea. Like he really did not want so much a documentary that talked about him, his life, you know, his personal life. Like he, you know, as far as for him, did he want that? Not really. What he would have loved would be like another concert film where we spoke to him about his F tunings, you know?
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying, Rob, right?
I do. I do. But it's
Yeah.
so great the way you were, whether, if it took some convincing or otherwise, the way you really followed him around in real time as he, reflected upon the past. I thought when he backs out of his, here's this superstar, great singer songwriter, lives in a mansion, and he's backing out of his garage in a Chevy sedan.
Exactly.
That's
And
right. And he drove that car to rehearsals and gigs and, you know, shoots and everything. He drove his own car most of the time. It's great. I
when
put him
when yeah when you follow someone that closely, I would suspect that there are moments that maybe the subject of the film is not always in the best mood or cooperative. Were there any of those times that you look back on and kind of smile?
Sure, the first scene of the film where he's talking about for loving me, he was angry at us, like really mad, Rob. It doesn't come across quite in the film because we didn't choose like the most intense parts, but he was mad and he was worried about us bringing that song to the fore. Because of what all the things that he says in that scene. But like that was a moment where he was like mad at us. He wasn't loving that at all. He wasn't feeling, oh gee, I'm so great. He was mad that we put him in that position. The thing about Gordon and the decision that we made to hang out with him the way you said was because he is infinitely revealing of himself. And that's what Canadians and fans, they all want to know, what's he like? And we had some people sort of being a little bored by the idea of a documentary about Gordon Lightfoot, being kind of like, well, because it's kind of like he's always there. So many Canadians had the impression there were several films made about him already, for instance. Like they sort of felt like, oh, Gordon Lightfoot, hasn't that been done? Anyway, so Joni and I decided, and you can imagine how much responsibility we felt making this film. And we talked about it a lot in advance. And we talked about how we felt that the most important thing was to present Gordon in as authentic a way as possible.
And you do. I mean, he's real throughout. Go ahead, Joan.
I think, too, he had decided, once he decided to do the film, he decided to try and give us something of himself that people have not seen before. And because he does a lot of interviews and he has some pat answers and, you know, all that stuff. He decided in his heart he wasn't going to do that. He was going to give us something real and deeper than he had let himself be exposed in the past.
I don't want to spoil the opening scene for people who haven't seen it. By the way, we're talking with Martha Kehoe and Joan Tassone. They are the co-directors of the great documentary film, If You Could Read My Mind, which chronicles the life, times, and music of Gordon Lightfoot. But that opening scene, I hate that song. I mean, it's just every time I watch it, it brings a smile to my face. Did you get the sense that, and maybe I'll ask you personally, not what Gordon thought, but did you have a certain moment or an era of his career that's your favorite? This is not a trick question. Neither one of you can answer.
Okay, well, I'm going to just say that, you know, for many Canadians, Gordon's first record was like the Ark of the Covenant being delivered to Canada. You know, in our film, you see a Marie McLaughlin say, we'd had this thing, and where was our music? Where was our music? And there it was. Gordon created. So his first album, for many Canadians between my age and Joni's age, or so, because I would have been around 5 or 6 when I first listened to that record. My older sisters were playing it on heavy rotation, and I can remember being sick home from school and just playing the album over and over again. And a lot of people in Canada really have that with his first record. It's like almost like your childhood soundtrack or something, you know? But then, of course, around the time of If You Can Read My Mind, he was really firing on all cylinders, musically, culturally. Like, he just was in a moment, you know? The move from folk music to more orchestral, or I think it really, he grew up a lot in those years as well, as a writer, as a man, as an entertainer. He gained the confidence of touring in the States, and, you know, so it's really hard to say. I would say that that period, the early folk period for me, is just like a beautiful, special time. I can't even explain it. And then the early 70s are just incredible, like in terms of his creative output and the quality of the music that he's putting out.
Yeah, I think the 70s for me would be, even though I was a little young, so I didn't experience it in real time. But going back, that would be my favorite. Joan, do you have a favorite?
I can't express it better than Martha. I sort of feel the same way. And I look back to the first time I ever encountered him, met him in his company, and he was already at the height of his popularity. So all those songs that Martha's talked about were in his concerts. And I remember meeting him. I was telling Martha yesterday, I was reminded of the first time I met him when I was an AD. I was a, you know, television assistant. And we were having a meeting. And when we were waiting, sitting, waiting around, the band was there and producer, director. And when he walked in the room, it was like a galvanizing force. Because we were going to do one of his Olympic concerts we were covering. He did several benefit concerts at that time.
Rob, so, we're very proud of the fact that we've been around so long that we created our own archive for this movie. Like, Joni worked on the show that where he's singing Sundown in this.
That's pretty cool, though. That. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we did a show called Country Gold in the early 90s. That was about all the folk and country performers of Canada. And we did about 18 minutes on Gord at that time. And for that show, we shot the number that we used to close the credits, I'll Tag Along. We shot that ourselves in, Joni directed it. I actually didn't have much to do with that. I was more of a watcher because I wrote that show. But anyway.
And researched it.
Yeah, we created our own archive, and we find our own archive quite satisfying, Rob.
I love that. I love that, as you should. So, Martha, you mentioned about what he meant to Canada. I interviewed writer Sylvie Simmons about a year or so ago, and she's written, I think, a book or two about Leonard Cohen. And I said, why didn't you do one on Gordon Lightfoot instead? And she kind of dismissed, like, oh, yeah, Gordo's not that good, but Leonard Cohen. Where does Gordon rank? Is he the top and the biggest voice that Canada's ever heard? Or does Leonard Cohen kind of inch up toward him?
I think it's really, really ridiculous to even ask that question. Look at how effing blessed we are. We live in a country of snow and effing ice, and we have like two amazing, sexy poets making sense of our lives. Why choose between, Rob? We embrace both Gordon and Leonard. We want both poets in our
lives. I have been known to ask difficult or stupid questions.
Well, I enjoy the question. Don't get me wrong. You can see that my blood is up. That's a good question. Why choose, Rob?
Joan, do you want to weigh in? I don't even know if I want to go any further with this question.
No, I feel the same way. We often agree, Martha and I, and she knows how to express it, so I'll let her do that. We love Leonard. If we could have done a documentary on Leonard Cohen as well, we would have died and gone to heaven.
Yeah.
We'd be joining him, them both right now.
I want to be respectful of your time, so I just have a few more questions. In my opinion, especially as a Minnesota native, we cannot talk about Gordon Lightfoot without talking about the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts of the song, what you present in the film, and if there are any stories that didn't make the cut that are worth sharing.
Don't you want to start? Or
that's a bunch of questions.
I'm on a roll here, you know.
Oh, we're loving it, Rob. Don't you worry.
On Edmund Fitzgerald, we didn't go into great detail, and he has done, and for other projects as well, about he became friends with the families of those
survivors
who died.
Sailors that died.
He kept up with them right till the end. They kept up correspondences. He went and met the families, and I think you might have heard the story that when he found out one of the details of his song was wrong, because it was sort of implied in his first lyric that it was a crew error.
Yep.
It wasn't. And he changed the lyrics of the song deliberately that way. That's one thing about him, his attention to detail. He is a perfectionist par excellence. Anyway, sorry, I went on a tangent there.
I understand, and maybe you've heard this as well, that when he first performed that live in Duluth, he was booed because the fans thought he was trying to make money off this tragedy. And slowly but surely, maybe not so slowly, they realized, no, this is actually a great tribute to these 29 sailors.
Well, I think that that this is one of the reasons that we included Greg from Bad Religion, because he was also a Milwaukee guy and a Great Lakes guy, and he's also a punk rocker, like very much a punk rocker, right, Greg? And He is so influenced by Gordon. I don't know if you've ever listened to his music. And we had never at all. But I knew Greg, and he's very famous in the alternative world for being a professor and quite a smart guy. And he put out a solo album. And I really think you should give it a listen, Rob, because there's one, what was it called? It's called, I can't think of it. It's the name of a town. And you just listen to him and you think, oh my God, this guy is like, sounds like Gore, particularly on the solo album where he stripped away from some of the heavier instrumentation. Anyway, we thought it was important to include him because he was a younger generation guy, someone from a margin, a margins of the United States, Great Lakes region, who just had so much pride and so much connection to this song. And, for us, that was really, really cool. And it showed the breadth of Gord's influence.
Yeah, there's something,
Because
and there's something about that affinity. We who have grown up on or around the Great Lakes have for not only that song, but Gordon Lightfoot. I can't explain it, except I think maybe, as I noted in the introduction, that I think my first exposure to Gordon Lightfoot was when our family used to rent a little cabin along the North Shore of Lake Superior. So even before I heard the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, my mindset was Gordon Lightfoot. North Shore, Minnesota, Lake Superior.
exactly.
Yeah.
And
And they fit.
also,
They fit so well.
yeah, and guess what? Guess who else is from Duluth?
Bob Dylan?
Yeah.
Yep.
So Bob is someone whose Gordon songs have always resonated with particularly.
Must be something in the water.
That's it. Right? I mean, although, you look at Ronnie, Ronnie's from Arkansas. And Levon Helm and those guys, they were all big fans of Gord's as well. And Kris Kristofferson, obviously, he had a very close affinity with. So he was revered all over. But yes, I think there's something about our geography, the loneliness, maybe the desolation, these big freighter ships. It is part of our sort of collective memories. And Gord definitely. His collective memory. He grew up almost in Muskoka and on the Canadian Shield.
So, just a couple quick questions before we wrap.
Are we
Another thing
boring
I
the
re
hell out of you, Rob? Is that was that? Are we boring? I feel
absolutely. I'm
boring right
watching.
now, don't
Don't you see me looking at my watch? Like, can this end or not? Not at all.
I know.
Another thing I really like about the film is you don't sugarcoat some of the warts in his life, particularly his drinking. Joan, did you know him when he was still enjoying a beer or two?
That's when I met him. That's
Okay.
when he was at the height of his stardom and everything that he, yeah.
What was he like before he sobered up?
Oh, good question. He can be cranky, Gord. And I think the drinking brought out the worst of his crankiness. So he could be, as Barry Keane says, the drummer says in the film, he could be sort of nasty. He never was around me. I never witnessed that. I just know the stories. So, yeah, it was a good thing that he quit drinking, and he recognizes that. And he, as they say in the film, he did it cold turkey. He was determined. He's a man of a powerful will.
Well, I wonder if it
He's
goes back
always
to what you said about him being a perfectionist. Once he sets his mind to something, that's how it's
right.
going to be.
Yeah. Well, also, we included in the movie that story about Frank Sinatra and the record company people, Mo Austin. Gord really admired those guys. He admired Mo Austin and he admired Lenny Waronker. And he always wanted to be professional, Gord. Like, there's a level of professionalism that certain entertainers have. Like, you go see Dolly Parton, she's not gonna make a mistake, right? She's gonna be perfect. And that's what Gord wanted. So when the record company guy said to him, "Hey, you better stop your drinking," he thought, "I now must do this as a professional scenario. It's not about me and my fun now. This is about my profession." I think, Joni, discuss.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing about Gord is in preparing for his concerts, they were so important to him. He practiced, you know, till last year. His last touring date was in October last year. The band would come over and practice again, even though they knew those songs. And he would arrive every day at 1:30 in the afternoon before a concert and tune his guitars all afternoon. Because he was obsessed with that the tuning be perfect. So those are, you know, he was manic
got some
about
standards,
getting
Rob.
Yeah.
You had a few standards.
I guess so. I guess so. All right, let's, as we wrap, I'm going to ask you to share a story. It can be your favorite story. It can be a humorous story, whatever it is about Gordon. And if you don't mind, if you'll indulge me, I'll start. So in the mid-90s, I was working at a radio station in Minneapolis, and Gordon came in for the midday show, and he had some, you know, black and white publicity photos. So I kind of, you know, I wasn't producing that show, so I kind of waltz in. I said, okay, Gordo, my mom's name is Trudy. She's a big fan. Can you sign it to her? And he did, and he was gracious, and I presented it to her, and I said, you really got to hang this in the waiting room of Dad's office. And she never did. I said, Mom, I worked so hard, and we don't know where that photo is to this day. But he was great. So that's my little encounter with Gordon. Martha.
Jody, you go first. I can't think of a good one right now.
This popped into my brain because it was part of the shooting of the film. We found he was a copyist, and he made a living as a copyist as a young man before he, you know, made it in the recording world, and a meticulous copyist. And so we hired had to search out a young guy. We wanted to shoot a young man's hands copying music. And so we found a guy because it's a lost art. Everything's done digitally now. So we found a guy, and we needed to have a desk. So in the film, there's old footage of Gordon actually in his basement apartment. You know, and he still has that desk, and we knew that. So I went to him and said, could we borrow that desk? And he got really tense about it. And he, oh, no, I want that desk. And he says, finally, and he was really in a flap. And finally he said, I know what desk you can use. You can use the Quebec table. And it's in his office. It is, you know, his practice room. It's a smaller desk. He said, I wrote so many songs on that thing and used it for such a long time because it could fit in the trunk of a car.
Mm-hmm.
So he was happy with lending us the Quebec table.
I love it.
Desk.
That's
Martha? Well, I'm going to tell a story that's not really my story, but it's about Gord's writing. And, you know, in the movie, we show him with the Good Brothers. And the Good Brothers are really good friends of his, and they were good musicians, and he often had them open for him, and they were real friends. And so they did live some crazy times together, right? I mean, they talked about being on tour with Gord, drinking on the plane, like for hours, coming back from LA, having played a gig, gotten on the plane, drank, and Gord said, let's go and play a round of golf. And they all went to a golf course straight off the plane, three sheets to the wind, and played a round of golf before they went home.
Nice.
But that's not even my story. My story is they're going to California. They're in California, and they decide to go to San Francisco. And they're going to like some hippie house in up north of San Francisco. So they're driving in a limo, as you do, a stretch limo. And I think it's just Brian and Bruce and Gord. And they have a big bunch of beer, and they're drinking beers in the back of the limo, and they have a thing that they're throwing all their empties into. And so they're having quite a special, you know, trip up to San Francisco, and they drive by a guy with a sign, a hitchhiker, that says mother. They literally drive by a guy with with a sign that says mother. And Gord says, oh, a sign that says mother, and he freaking writes 10 degrees and colder, like the big part of that song, right then and there, drunk as a skunk in this limo with these guys.
Amazing.
Based off of one vision of this guy with the sign mother. And, you know, this is the power of his creativity and his ability to see stories behind, like, the image of a human being.
The film is If You Could Read My Mind, a documentary film about Gordon Lightfoot. It's fantastic. It's available as we speak on Amazon Prime and elsewhere. I highly recommend it. The directors are Joan Tassone and Martha Kehoe. Thank you so much for taking time to share memories of Gordon Lightfoot.